left once, many years back. You would think this would be outweighed by all the others I left, yet she was everything to me. The smart man in me sees it clearly, though. She was only 25, just trying to have a good time. We dated for a few months, but I let all my walls down. I decided once and for all to just be myself. And then she dumped me. She had never promised me anything. I was drinking like a maniac, too. And I don't blame her. I had to see her at a play reading a couple of years ago. She played my wife. "How are you?" she said before the reading. And I pretended I was fine, but I was in hell. "Get out of there. Do not engage," I thought. "Just pretend everything's okay." "I have a couple of kids with my partner now," she said, "and life is good. Are you with anybody?" "No," I said, "I'm still looking." I wish I wouldn't have said that because it made it sound like I was still looking ever since she dumped me. But it's true. I'm still looking. Then the play reading ended, and she was no longer my wife, and I got the hell out of there. And she still looked exactly the same. These days, I have faith in God, but too often that faith seems, well, blocked. But then everything is blocked by the medication I'm on. These days, too, I ask this question. Am I blocking my relationship with a higher power by taking Suboxone? One of my big problems, and the reason I've had so much trouble getting sober over the years, is I never let myself feel uncomfortable long enough to have a spiritual connection. So I fix it with pills and alcohol before God can jump in and fix me. I did a breathwork class recently. For a half an hour, you breathe in this very intense, very uncomfortable way. You cry, you see things, you kind of feel high. For me, it's a freebie high, the best kind. But the Suboxone even blocks that feeling. Half the doctors I speak to say I should be on Suboxone for at least a year, but probably the rest of my life. Other doctors tell me I'm not technically sober while I'm still on it. It's very difficult to get all the way off in either way, which is ironic because it's a drug used to get you off other drugs. Recently, when I was hooked up to an IV of it, the dosage I was receiving was 0.5 lower than it was supposed to be, and it got me so sick and scared I had to bump it back up. You feel terrible when you stop taking it. When you take heroin, the drugs hit your opiate receptors, and then you are high, and then it fades, and you're not hitting the opiate receptors anymore. Then you're sober for a while. Then, maybe the next day, you hit your opiate receptors again, and then you're high, and on. But Suboxone works differently, wrapping itself around the receptor, and it doesn't go away, which means it's basically damaging your receptors 24/7. So one of the theories that I have about my struggle with happiness is that I've damaged these receptors. My dopamine gets replaced by the Suboxone. The dopamine hit is what you get when you enjoy something, like looking at a sunset or playing tennis, and you make a good shot or you hear a song you love. But I'm pretty sure my opiate receptors are very seriously damaged, possibly to the point of no return. That's why I'm always a little bummed. Just like pancreatitis, maybe if I had left my opioid receptors alone for an extended period, they'd fix themselves and I'd be happy again. I've seen God in my kitchen, of all places. So I know there's something bigger than me. I know I can't make a plant, for a start. I know it's an omnipresent love and acceptance that means that everything's going to be okay. I know that something happens when you die. I know you move on to something wonderful. Alcoholics and addicts like myself want to drink for the sole purpose of feeling better. Well, that's at least true for me. All I ever wanted was to feel better. I didn't feel good. I had to have a couple of drinks and I felt better. But as the disease progresses, it takes more and more and more and more and more and more and more to feel better. If you puncture the membrane of sobriety, alcoholism kicks in and goes, "Hey, remember me? Nice to see you again. Now, give me just as much as you did last time, or I'll kill you or make you crazy." And then the obsession of my mind kicks in. I can't stop thinking about feeling better, matched with the phenomenon of craving, and what you're left with is a bruise that starts off one way and never gets better. Nobody has a drinking problem and then stops and then drinks socially and it's fine. The disease just picks up. The Big Book says that alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. But I would also add that it's patient. As soon as you raise your hand and say, "I'm having a problem," it's as though addiction says, "Well, if you're going to be stupid and say something about it, I'll go away for a while. I'll be in rehab for 3 months and think, well, I'm going to use when I get out of here, but I can wait for 9 more days to do it." The disease is just drumming its fingers. In AA, it's often said that when you're in a meeting, your disease is doing one-arm push-ups outside, just waiting for you to leave. I've almost died several times, and the lower you get down the scale, death is as low as it goes, FYI, the more people you can help. So when my life is firing on all cylinders, I have folks I sponsor, people calling me to help them with their lives. The 2 years from 2001 to 2003 were two of the happiest of my life. I was helping people, sober, strong. There were other good side effects of sobriety. I was also single for some of it. So I'd go to clubs, but I didn't want to drink. The miracle had happened for me. And let me tell you, no one is more popular at 2 a.m. in a club than a sober guy who says, "Hi, how are you?" to a woman. I don't think I've ever gotten laid more than those 2 years. But the disease is patient. You slowly stop going to all the meetings you're supposed to go to. I don't really need to go to the one on Friday night. And then, by the time you're deep into that kind of thinking, alcoholism is coming for you, baffling and powerful and patient. Suddenly, you're not going to any meetings anymore, and you've convinced yourself that you understand it all. Now, I don't need to do this anymore. I get it. Addicts are not bad people. We're just people who are trying to feel better, but we have this disease. When I feel bad, I think, "Give me something that makes me feel better." It's as simple as that. I would still love to drink and take drugs, but because of the consequences, I don't. Because I'm so late stage that it would kill me. Recently, my mother told me that she was proud of me. I'd written a movie and she'd read it. I'd wanted her to say that my whole life. When I pointed this out, she said, "What about a little forgiveness?" "I do forgive you," I said. "I do." I wonder if she can forgive me for everything I've put her through. If a selfish, lazy fuck like myself can change, then anyone can. No secret gets worse just because it has been told. At this point in my life, the words of gratitude pour out of me because I should be dead. And yet somehow I'm not. There must be a reason for that. It's simply too hard for me to understand if there isn't. I don't believe in half-assing things anymore. The path of least resistance is boring, and scars are interesting. They tell an honest story. And they are proof that a battle was fought, and in my case, hard one. I have many scars now. The first time I took my shirt off in the bathroom after returning from the hospital after my first surgery, I burst into tears. I was so disturbed by it. I thought life was over. After about a half an hour, I got my shit together enough to call my drug dealer, who proceeded to ask me what was wrong, like he was a social worker or a priest, not a drug dealer. 3 days ago, I had my 14th surgery. It's 4 years later. I cried again. I should learn to get used to it, though, because there will be more surgeries. I will never be done. I will always have the bowels of a man in his 90s. In fact, I have never not cried after a surgery. Not once. I've stopped calling the drug dealers, though. There are so many scars on my stomach that all I need to do is look down to know that I've been through a war, a self-inflicted war. Once, at some Hollywood function, shirts allowed, nay, insisted on. In fact, thank God, Martin Sheen turned to me and said, "Do you know what St. Peter says to everyone who tries to get into heaven?" When I looked blankly, the man who once was president said, "Peter says, don't you have any scars?" And when most would respond proudly, "Well, no, I don't," Peter says, "Why not? Was there nothing worth fighting for?" Martin Sheen, like Pacino, Sean Penn, Ellen DeGeneres, Kevin Bacon, Chevy Chase, Robert De Niro, these are all members of the famous club I've encountered. An informal little thing you join when you're in an airport or at a function and someone also famous comes up and says hi, like we know each other. The scars, though. The scars. My stomach looks like a topographical map of China. And they fucking hurt. Sadly, these days, my body just laughs at 30 milligrams of OxyContin. Oral meds don't work at all. The only thing that works a little bit is IV medication. And obviously I can't take that at home, so off I go, back to the hospital. In January 2022, I'd had a 6-inch incision with metal staples. This is the life of someone who's been blessed with the big, terrible thing. And they aren't letting me smoke. It'll be a good day if I get through it not smoking and nothing crazy happens. When I don't smoke, I gain weight, too. In fact, recently I gained so much weight that when I looked into a mirror, I thought someone was following me. When you get sober, you gain weight. When you quit smoking, you gain weight. Those are the rules. As for me, I would trade places with each and every one of my friends, Pressman, Bierko, any of them, because none of them had a big, terrible thing to deal with. None of them had battled their entire lives with a brain that was built to kill them. I would give it all up to not have that. No one believes this, but it's true. My life is no longer on fire, though. Dare I say it, throughout all this turmoil, I've grown up. I am more real, more genuine. I don't need to leave the people in a room screaming in laughter. I just need to stand up straight and leave the room. And hopefully not walk directly into a closet. It's a calmer me now, a more genuine me, a more capable me. Sure, there is a chance that if I want a good role in a movie, I'd have to write it now. But I can do that too. I am enough. I'm more than enough. And I don't need to put on a show anymore. I have made my mark. Now it's time to sit back and enjoy it. And find true love. And real life. Not one that is run on fear. I am me. And that should be enough. And it always has been enough. I was the one who didn't get that. And now I do. I'm an actor. I'm a writer. I'm a person. And a good one at that. I want good things for myself and others. And I continue to work for these things. There is a reason I'm still here. And figuring out why is the task that has been put in front of me. And it will be revealed. There is no rush, no desperation. Just the fact that I'm here and I care about people is the answer. Now, when I wake up curious, wondering what the world has in store for me and I for it. And that's enough to go on. I want to keep learning. I want to keep teaching. Those are the grand hopes I have for myself. But in the meantime, I want to laugh and have a good time with my friends. I want to make love to a woman I am madly in love with. I want to become a father and make my mother and my father proud. I love art now, too, and I've started collecting. I got my Banksy painting at an auction in New York. I bought it via the phone. I've never met him, but I want him to know if there was ever a fire, my Banksy would be the first thing I'd save. I wonder if he'd care. Actually, he'd probably set fire to it himself. I've accomplished a lot in my life, but there is still so much left to do, which daily excites me. I was a kid from Canada who had all his dreams come true. They were just the wrong dreams. And instead of giving up, I changed and found new dreams. I keep finding them all the time. They're right there in the view, in the valley, on the edging in flashes that bounce off the ocean when the sun hits just so. When someone does something nice for someone, I see God. But you can't give away something you don't have, so I try to improve myself daily. When those moments come and I am needed, I've worked out my shit, and I do what we're all here for, which is simply to help other people. Interlude, the smoking section. One day, God and my therapist got together and decided to miraculously remove my desire to take drugs, a desire that's been plaguing me since 1996. My therapist said to me, "The next time you think about OxyContin, I want you to think about living the rest of your days with a colostomy bag." God didn't say anything, but then he doesn't have to because he's God. But he was there. Having had a colostomy bag for 9 months, my therapist's words hit hard. And when this man's words hit hard, the prudent thing to do is to get into action immediately. What he said caused a very small window to open, and I crawled through it. And on the other side was life without OxyContin. The next move up from OxyContin is heroin, a word that has always frightened me. A fear that has undoubtedly saved my life. My fear, of course, is that I would like that drug so much, I would never stop doing it, and it would kill me. I don't know how to do it, and I don't want to learn. Even in my darkest days, that was never an option. So, since heroin was a no-go, and OxyContin had been the only drug I'd ever wanted to take, it was safe to say that my desire to take drugs had vanished. Couldn't find it if I tried, and I'm not trying. I felt lighter on my feet. I felt freedom. The monkey was off my back. The part of my brain that was out to kill me had vanished. Well, not so fast. I had recently had my 14th stomach surgery. This one to remove a hernia that was protruding through my abdominal wall. It had been very painful, and I had been given OxyContin. We addicts are not martyrs. If we're in serious pain, we're allowed to have pain medication. It just has to be done carefully. This means the bottle of pills is never in my hand, and the medication is always administered by someone else, and as prescribed. It also meant that I had a brand new scar on my stomach. This time, a 6-inch incision. Really, guys? My colon burst. You opened me up to the point where you could get a bowling ball in there. But now I get the biggest scar? After the surgery, the moment I took the drug, my pain dissipated. But something else happened. I could feel my digestive tract freezing up once again. PTSD, anyone? And when that happened, it was straight to the emergency room, where I knew they would either give me something to help me go to the bathroom or tell me I needed surgery right away. And any time I had a surgery, there was a chance I could wake up with a colostomy bag. It had happened twice already. It could so easily happen again. You know what could ensure that I would never wake up from a surgery with an irreversible colostomy bag? Quitting doing OxyContin, which I already had done. I was free. There are no words to describe how humongous this news was. I have not been interested in taking a drug since.